You're listening to RTE Lyric Live from New Music Dublin.
It's a great pleasure to welcome one of the key players in tonight's opening night, well, at least opening night for us here on RTE Lyric Live, as far as New Music Dublin is concerned. And I'm delighted to welcome back to our programme Carol McGonnell, the clarinetist, and who this evening gives the world premiere of a new work by John Buckley. Can I just ask you first, Carol, presumably you knew each other to begin with.
Well, first of all, hi, Paul. It's wonderful to be chatting with you again. I always love when we get a chance to catch up and have a chat. I've known about John since I was doing my Leaving Cert. I don't know if anybody else who's did a music Leaving Cert might remember that his solo sonata for violin was one of the pieces on the Leaving Cert syllabus back then. And I was just absolutely fascinated by this piece. I'd never heard any contemporary music, or certainly never studied or, you know, paid much attention to any contemporary music up until that point. And so with Páirc Ó Chonaighan, who was my music teacher at Presentation Secondary School in Terranure, we studied and kind of went deep into John's solo sonata. And I was just so fascinated by this entire world that was kind of opening up. You know, there were no bar lines, there was no time signature, there was no key signature, there were all these extended techniques and effects. And I just remember my whole, you know, my mind just kind of lit up with all of these sounds and all of these possibilities. It was, yeah, a great introduction to contemporary music.
And you mentioned possibilities there, Carol. Very often it's said of John Buckley and his music that it doesn't really adhere to any particular compositional school as such.
So the works of his that I know that I've become familiar with over time, I would absolutely attribute that kind of a thought to. I can't say that I would fit him into any particular genre of contemporary music particularly. I feel that he's influenced by lots and lots of different things and different styles, and he's really very much himself. He's very much his own creator and compositional voice, and and this piece is certainly no exception, I wouldn't say, to that.
And so, Carol, was this piece actually written for you specifically?
Well, I think originally the thought was it was going to be written for Carrie Creakle, and then there was some issue, I don't know if it was with the dates or what it was, for the performance. But then John asked me if I would play it and has subsequently dedicated it to me. So,
and yeah. That relationship between the two of you during the writing of this, has that played a large part?
No, I wouldn't say so. I think John had pretty much written the piece when I got to have a look at it. He was very generous. He wanted to he wanted to hear my feedback. He wanted to know, you know, if there are any issues that needed to be altered or corrected or changed, not corrected, but, you know, anything that needed to be adjusted. And he was very, very open to any suggestions that I would have had, although I didn't actually have any, because the piece I thought was excellently written and very cognizant of the possibilities of the clarinet. Yeah, with great, great attention to what the clarinet can do and how to highlight the possibilities of the instrument.
You know, it's interesting you talk there about the genesis of the work, Carol, but then there's the other extreme, which is the first time that you actually come to see the completed score.
Yeah, that's true. And I have to say, I did have a little bit of a panic when I saw it first, because I just thought there's the middle movement particularly, it's called the scherzo. It's really slapdash and kind of a little bit nuts. And I thought, how much time do I have to get this sorted out? And so I have put an enormous amount of work, a lot of metronome work, a lot of just, you know, drilling it just to get it into the fingers so that, you know.
Yeah, I always imagine, Carol, that when you see that first sight of a completed score, of course there's great excitement, but there's bound to be nerves as well.
Like when you dive in first, sometimes you do start to think, gosh, is this even possible? Like you can't kind of, it's hard to get your head around that you're going to actually be standing up on stage in a few months and you're going to be, you know, this is going to be something that's going to just flow out. And but you have to trust also, because, you know, we've been in these situations so many times at this point that you're like, yeah, this will happen. Even though I can't quite see it right now, this will happen. And then, of course, I'm a bit of a nerd when it comes to practice. Like, I love just sitting in my room and just working up gradually with the metronome and, you know, doing different kinds of exercises to get the notes into my fingers. Like, there's something I find really satisfying about that. So So yeah, it definitely wasn't a slog. It's been a lot of fun learning the piece.
And there must be something very special about knowing that you are the first person to perform this work. I mean, that's incredibly exciting, I think.
It is incredibly exciting. And also, like, just to be hearing it, you know, I can't wait to hear how the orchestra fits in with everything. You know, John was great. He put together a couple of MIDI files, MIDI versions of the orchestra parts at different tempos so that I could work with them, which was incredibly helpful. But MIDI, of course, has serious limitations when it comes to, you know, the sound quality. And so I have an idea of, you know, what's happening where and when. But I just can't wait to hear it with the full orchestra and to be able to have that feeling of being able to interact and move, and for us to be able to. I have the feeling that there's a lot of chamber music kind of like possibilities with this piece, where we can really interact and have this kind of playful interplay, particularly in the middle movement, and a lot of lyrical moments that we can pass back and forth in the outer movements. So I can't wait for that.
You know, Carol, always when you use a word like interaction, that really it interests me, because we've done a lot of concerts together over the years, one way or another, very often at festivals. And one of the sort of privileges of my job, as I see it at any rate, is I get to see musicians from a very different point of view from maybe the audience. I'm much closer very often, or maybe just off stage or whatever. It's always struck me that when you talk of interaction, you're a very physical performer. It's one of the things that I immediately think of when I think of you, is not just the sound, but the exhilaration of actually watching you play.
No, that's a lovely thing to say. I think, yeah, for me, I feel like I don't play the clarinet. Like, I play through the clarinet somehow.
Yes, yeah. That's what I like. It feels like that, or looks like that, definitely.
Yeah, and I feel like if I was just focused on the instrument and just playing, you know, the instrument with my fingers and with my breath and all of those kind of technical things, I think I would get so kind of wrapped up in my head that I don't know if I'd be able to do anything. I think I have to kind of make it like a full kind of body and kind of spiritual experience to kind of, you know, just involve everything that I have. But I feel that for me that works well, and I feel, you know, audiences do react, because I feel then they can open up as well to not just feel like they need to kind of sit there in this kind of very straight kind of stiff way, and that hopefully an audience can also relax a little bit and react in an open and, you know, hopefully joyful at times and emotionally responsive way. Like, I'm hoping that can breed that kind of a response from an audience.
You know, Carol, it probably seems like a ridiculous question in a way to ask you at this stage in your career, but nevertheless, I'm always fascinated. You know, why the clarinet?
Well, I didn't want to play the clarinet, Paul. I wanted to play the flute.
Really?
I think... But back then, like, Jimmy Galway was like, you know, the big thing, and of course, and still is spectacular musician. And I think so many children wanted to play the flute back then. And actually, you know, we have so many wonderful Irish flute players of my generation, who are, you know, in all of the major orchestras all over the place. And so flute was really, I think, and Doris Keogh was teaching at the academy. I wanted to study with her or with, I don't know. Anyway, I really wanted to play the flute, but I didn't get a place for flute. I got a place for clarinet. And I was devastated. But long story short, as soon as I got the instrument and started playing it, I realized, yeah, this is for me. This is my instrument. And, you know, there is no looking back.
It's another of those instruments that's very often compared, I suppose you could say so many are, but it's the clarinet, very often I do hear, being compared to the human voice.
Yeah, they often say, you know, Mozart referred to the clarinet in that way. And I think so. What I think about a lot is kind of speaking or singing through the instrument. It's that kind of communicating, not just creating a beautiful sound. You know, to me, you know, focusing on just creating something beautiful, it's not enough. You know, it's great to create beautiful sounds, but it's also so freeing and liberating to create all kinds of sounds. Like, a human being doesn't just speak in a beautiful way all the time. You know, we have so many expressive possibilities as humans, and why not use all of them when we get out on stage? So the clarinet really does, I think, open up so many possibilities for different sound productions, sound quality production, and just ways of using the instrument that it can really express so many different emotions.
And particularly, I would have thought something that's very prevalent with a festival such as New Music Dublin. And we've collaborated, worked together, broadcast together on several festivals over the years. I wondered, do you have any ideas yourself about what contributes to the alchemy of a successful festival? For example, the last time that we were meeting and broadcasting at a festival, it was Killaloe Music Festival, ancient cathedral on the banks of the Shannon. Here we are, New Music Dublin, completely different. But nevertheless, there has to be that energy, that alchemy. What is it that makes a festival particularly stimulating and exciting for you?
As you know, there's so many different types of festivals, and you know, there's the kind of destination festival like Killaloe or Santa Fe, for example. I go to Santa Fe Chamber Music Festival very often in the summers, where people will just come from all over the world and camp out there for, you know, 3 to 5 weeks or whatever, and voraciously like eat everything up, and it becomes this kind of community, you know, event that it's like people will take their holidays and decide that, you know, this is what they're going to do, and year after year, you'll find the same crowd, the same people. New Music Dublin, of course, is a different kind of festival. Maybe there are people who come and camp out specifically for New Music Dublin every year. I'm sure there are.
Not this year.
But I think the curation of the festival is incredibly important. You know, that's to have that kind of vision of knowing, you know, which kind of pieces are going to work very well together or complement each other or create a certain kind of excitement or interest over the course of the festival. I think it's very important. And I think, you know, yet again, they've done a great job of that. I have so many friends actually playing in the festival this year, and all of their shows are before mine, and will I be able to like stay up late the night before, or how much will I actually be able to come to? I will come to at least a couple of things, but I would love just to be an audience member, to be honest, for this festival.
You know, Carol, it's easy to think because happily we see a lot of you, I think, throughout the year, but you are in fact based in Berlin. Talk about stimulus. That must be an incredibly stimulating place to be based as a musician, I would have thought.
Yeah, it is. I've been in Berlin now for almost 7 years. Although I have a lot to do in New York. I have a number of ensembles that I play with regularly there, and I also have a small teaching job. So I'm back in New York probably every month. And in a way, you know, the stimulation of both New York and Berlin is kind of similar, although I have to say there's a lot more fringe kind of things happening, I think, in Berlin than there are in New York nowadays. There are a lot more small venues, you know, with a lot of interesting things happening here, I think. But there is a point, Paul, where you just have to kind of not be aware. You have to, like, you know, if you have to get some work done. I have two children, smallish, relatively small children. And sometimes you just have to close off and just say, I'm going to completely ignore everything that's happening right now, because if I look, it's going to break my heart.
I was about to ask you, actually, Carol, because it's very much a case also of balance, the demands of playing, travel, and, of course, a family life. And the last time, actually, that we met was just after a concert that you'd given at the National Concert Hall here in Dublin, of course. But you were away off in the morning, I think, to California, and the family in tow.
That's right. And they were all at the concert. That's right. I remember. And
I remember.
And next morning, it's not very glamorous, Paul. You know, like the next morning you're like packing, you know, toothbrushes and everything and trying to like, you know, get children out of bed and to the airport at like 8:30 in the morning after playing some lovely concerto. But, you know, that's kind of the way it is. And it's brilliant to be able to bring the kids along as much as possible. You know, I always from the early days. I always kind of try to bring them along with me as much as possible whenever I'd be on the road. And they've become very flexible and very kind of open to whatever's going to happen. You know, they're definitely able to kind of roll with it.
And are they fascinated by the music? And, you know, are they showing signs, do you think, of following in your footsteps?
Yeah, both of them play music and love it. And the little one plays violin and the bigger one plays cello. and they're playing in the orchestra here, and you know, they love all of that. They're completely unimpressed with me. Like, they don't think like, Mama, why are you making all those awful noises again?
Well, that means you're doing a good job.
Yeah.
Carol, we've had an opportunity to catch up again. But before you go, and in light of the festival that we're enjoying at the minute, New Music Dublin, how important are these festivals devoted specifically to new work?
Well, I think they're incredibly important, Paul. You know, years and years ago, I was at the Manhattan School of Music taking a class on music criticism. And at the time, one of the critics from the New York Times came in to talk to us to kind of give a little bit of a presentation to the class and ask questions and all of that. And he was kind of saying how what a terrible pity it was that, you know, the New York Philharmonic wasn't playing more contemporary music, and in the days of Boulez when he was around and all of that. And I was very much into contemporary music already at that point. And I kind of was questioning and saying, well, why do we really need to, not to say that it's not important to play for orchestras to play contemporary music, it is very, very important. But it's also, I think, extremely important for there to be other vehicles for contemporary music to exist in, where people can really go deep, and where you can really take huge risks, and that it's expected that huge risks are going to be taken. Because I think there is a place also for a museum where you go and you see the old masters and you see the great works, and that there are orchestras and groups that specialize in those styles and in those, you know, in that repertoire. Not to say that they shouldn't push out of it from time to time, they should, but I think it's also important that there is a special, you know, that there are opportunities that are just dedicated to new work and to exploration of new work with people who have a lot of experience in doing that, you know, with music, with performers that spend a lot of their time with extended techniques and with all of the and the new language of contemporary music. I would say it's incredibly important.
Carol, you sharpen our focus and encapsulate so well what this festival is really all about. And I can only say, look forward to the next time we have to talk. But in the meantime, just huge congratulations on giving John Buckley's Clarinet Concerto with the National Symphony Orchestra, well, to the world.
Thank you so much, Paul.
You're listening to RTE Lyric Live from New Music Dublin.